This podcast is certified fresh.
Freshmediaworks.com.
Likey Pod.
The hedges along the parkway. The trees, they sashay, they nearly genuflect. They breathe. It's good to breathe. It's good to get away in summer. It makes you feel clean. The city, the squalor, the mess, that's what's killing us. Did I tell you about the rat I saw in the subway last night? It had a swollen belly and no fear. It went right for a transvestite in heels. Enough, I know. Not here, not now. I should relax, shut up, let go. Oh yes, Long Island's very fresh and nice. Do they have rats out here or just field mice? And I forget, what do people do with themselves in the suburbs? The streets are empty, the lawns unused. If I lived here, I'd spread out. I'd hang a hammock. I'd keep sheep. I'd dig a well. I'd build hummocks to my own specs. I'd be positively pastoral. But you're right, of course. Of course you're right. I couldn't keep sheep. There's probably an ordinance. They'd shoot me for ruining property values. But what's property anyway? Years ago, I read about a pillar of roses in an English garden. And so I own it. I have the deed by heart. Speaking of which, pull over. Look, here's a surprise for you. Check out my bicep. You like my new tattoo? What do you mean, what is it? Did it hurt? It's a miniature gazebo. Of course it hurt. Note the incredible detail. The wicked craftsmanship. See, it's a garden pagoda for me and you, with ivy and grass and a snake in the grass. Hey, what are you doing? Oh, yes, that's good. Yes, kiss it and make it better. Because it did hurt a bit. In fact, it hurt like hell. Remember that night when you touched me and I yelled? Okay, let's drive. Let's tour the hydrangeas and the lawns. What could be more suggestive than a grassy mattress? Maybe that TV glowing in a darkened den, shades nearly drawn? Slow down. That's strange. A sick room? A suburban tomb on a day like this, with the clouds all starched and bustling in a Disney sky? Look, they have a gazebo too, jam-packed with rusted rakes and trash. If I had their lawn, I'd soak it, sunbathe on it. I'd sleep out under the stars. I'd walk to the mall and strap a sack of fertilizer to my back and hike all the way home. We've lived in the city far too long. Yes, that's what's killing us. That and this monument to love we lug. This brick inscribed forever. Let's let it sink. Let's kiss. Give me the wheel. I'll drive so you can look at clouds. All clouds are clocks, bulldozing time. Do you remember who said that? A pauper? Philosopher? Well, he was right. Those pretty clouds are bullies. Bouffant armada. Fluffy but cruel. ushering last days for many.
That was Landscaping for Privacy by Eve Beglarian. Am I saying your name right? I forgot to ask you that before we recorded. Beglarian?
Yeah.
Okay.
Beglarian. That's good. Yeah.
And that is also your welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you, Michael. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. I first met Eve, years ago when Twisted Tutu was in Houston, and I took part in a kind of workshop, I guess it was, for one night. And then did a performance at DiverseWorks. So then we reconnected via email, and here she is.
Yay.
So I was reading back on Landscaping for Privacy, because on the new album, which is entitled Tell the Birds, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was the first track that really kind of grabbed me. So I wanted to start the show with that one. But it has a history with Twisted Tutu also, right?
Yeah, in fact, that piece was originally written for Twisted Tutu a while ago, like 1995. And I decided to put, and it came out originally on a compilation CD on CRI. And then when CRI folded, New World Records got their entire catalog. And so when I had a CD of my own come out on New World, we decided to put Landscaping on that disc as well, on Tell the Birds. So you can actually find it on this compilation CD called Emergency Music on CRI, which is out of print, or you can get it on Tell the Birds, which has a bunch of other stuff by me as well. So.
Okay. Was this a new recording of it? I'm looking at the CD now. Is this the 1995 recording?
It is. It's the same recording. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's so nice. The piano part, I never really dawned on me. It was fun looking at your website, but I was reading about the arpeggiator that you used, and in my mind, I never really thought that was done. It sounds random in ways, but now that I listen to it again, it's nice to know sort of how all that was done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the idea was to use the arpeggiator to keep everything like really rigidly even and sort of pumping along like a car on automatic, you know.
Yeah.
A nice big gas-guzzling American car, which hopefully will be extinct in no time. But
yeah.
In the meantime, we can enjoy it as a guilty pleasure.
And then those vibes come in. And are they real vibes, or is that a keyboard?
Yeah, no, that's also That's also it was all done using a PC88, which at the time was a new keyboard, and so it's all the internal sounds on the PC88.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds nice. Something about that with who wrote the poem? I meant to write that name down too.
Yeah, her name is Linda Norton. She's a really wonderful poet and also collage artist who lives in the Bay Area.
Okay.
And yeah.
So you really have this tendency toward using text with music. How did that start, or do you know? Is it just something that sort of naturally came to you?
Yeah, I think part of the text thing for me is that I love songs and I listen to songs all the time, but I'm not necessarily that interested all the time in writing something that comes off as a conventional song. And so the spoken word thing is a way of being able to have text and deal with stories or with, you know, verbal ideas that doesn't seem like, oh, this is a song and should be compared to all the other songs you've always heard or already heard in your life, you know? So that's part of it. And also I think I'm really attracted to the musicality of the spoken voice, not in the ways that are being explored at the moment in pop music necessarily, but sometimes in those ways, but more a sort of, you know, nuanced sense of what you can do with language, spoken language, you know? And, I mean, part of it is for a lot of years I supported my composing life by producing books on tape, audiobooks. And so I was directing actors and working with actors in a totally verbal framework. I mean, a lot of the times there was no music at all or just stupid music at the heads and tails of the cassettes or whatever. And I think that had some influence on my taking spoken text really seriously as a place where music can happen.
That's interesting. I read about that on your website too, about the fact that you had done that with the books on tape. So
yeah,
and I didn't put the obvious together, but thank you for doing that.
Well, it took me a while to realize that there was a connection there because for me, it was like, that's the commercial work I do. It's my day job, you know?
Right.
But it was a really interesting day job. And so it's cool with me that it infected my non-day job, if you will.
Oh, yeah. Funny. That seems like it could be, like, really a tedious job to do or, you know, in some ways could be pretty interesting, I guess, depending on whose novel you're putting to tape.
Yeah, it definitely depends on the quality of the book and the quality of the writing and also on the actor, you know, because some actors, you know, there's no rehearsal. So you walk into the studio, you shake hands with this actor that you've never met before in your life, and you sit down and you start working. And it can be sort of simply babysitting, you know, to make sure that every sentence got recorded or whatever. But if you build a relationship, then it can be really more like an actual exchange and a real directing project. And that, when that would happen, that was really fun because we could sort of delve into it, you know?
Oh, yeah. Do you have a favorite program or a favorite book on tape that you did?
Well, in a way, I think my very favorite was one that was right at the end. And in a way, I think it's part of what made me decide to retire because I felt like it was so intense and cool. And it's actually a Stephen King novel called Hearts in Atlantis. And William Hurt read it, and he was really intense and really focused. And in a way, I mean, it's a series of interconnected stories, and the first story is 12 hours long. And he did stuff where there's like motivic relationships over the 12 hours. I mean, it's just mind-blowingly cool. You
know?
Wow. I mean, he was just really, really brilliant and really in it, you know. And then they also gave us a budget so that we could write music, and I put together a band of really cool, you know, New York players, and we really, I feel really great about it as a project, you know. So So after that, it was sort of like, I can't do this anymore, because it's not like you get the opportunity to do that very often, you know. So
was it one of those, like, there's not going to be an experience to top this, so?
Yeah, I mean, I had gotten to the point of, like, it's time for me to stop doing this because it's really routine, really, really, really routine. And then the fact that such a wonderful experience happened felt like, yeah, this is a good place to stop.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So,
well, the next piece we're going to listen to is Making Hay, which also has a text base to it. Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah.
I just got this one yesterday, so.
Right. Well, this piece is sort of a curiosity, and if people have responses, I'd really like to hear what you think of it, because this is really the first time it's a pre-release, like it's going to come out. Oh, hold on, my phone's ringing.
That's okay.
Yeah, the story behind this piece is that I have this old professor of mine whose name is Jim Randall, and he's a really wonderful and sort of quirky person who started out as a real uptown, you know, Princeton intellectual type composer, you know, 12-tone, the whole nine yards. And when they bombed Cambodia a long time ago, he sort of changed his relation to music. It became a political thing for him, I think. And really got interested in, well, in spoken word stuff, in improvisation, in, you know, language art, all this different kind of stuff. And he was my thesis advisor in school. And about a year ago, a friend of his called and said that they were going to put together a CD honoring him, and did I want to make something? And so I thought, yeah, that'd be really cool. And I had this piece that I had written as a student that was like a 12-tone, whatever, uptown type piece. And I thought maybe there's something I can do with this old piano piece that is totally unrecognizable as my music. I mean, stylistically, in no way does it resemble anything that I do now. And I had gotten one of these spam emails that's, you know, I can't remember if it was about making my penis bigger or you know, refinancing my mortgage. I don't remember. But it had this way of defeating the spam filters that probably you've seen, and where it's like, it's called a dictionary lookup. And what it does is it has a grammatical structure, and then it goes through randomly and puts in words out of a dictionary. And what that does is mean that the percentage of appearances of the word Viagra or penis or mortgage or whatever is much lower than it would be. And it's pasted at the bottom of the email.
Okay.
As a way of having the filters that look for a high percentage of the word penis or Viagra or whatever not see it, right? Because if there are all these other words, it sort of makes penis invisible, so to speak. and so it's totally random, but it ends up feeling like this incredible piece of found poetry, you know, or I found it to be so. And so I copied it out of the spam email and turned it into the lyrics or the text for this piece. And so I read it pretty much without revising it, although I think I inflect it with some, you know, significance that undoubtedly the randomized program didn't recognize. And then I added a bass part and a percussion part, and that's what the piece is now. And the original piano piece is still there, but during the course of the piece, it gets simplified and turned into something that might be slightly more recognizable as my music.
Ah, I love it. That kind of thing, just, this is what I love about your work so much. These things that show up that are just so, yeah. They're just so, yeah.
I'm so glad.
Well, let's listen to Making Hay.
Was it there too when that happened? Microcosm. Curium at the cloud, or even Greenberg, as in yarn. Philip at passenger, or even threesome, as in vanity. Tammy was at persuasive when that happened. Ephemeral. Binny at tattle, or even avert, as in round. Tammy was at delirious when that happened. Emerge. Tammy was at coarse when that happened. Cry. Shadowy at name, or even royal, as in graves. Tammy was at 90 when that happened. Glacier. Try diagonal at bromide, or even Alan, as in Tarzan. Wiggling at effluvium, or even CCNY, as in decouple. Tammy was at Taurus when that happened. Brazen. Courtier at scud, or even tried, as in oryx. Tammy was at Lori when that happened. Art. Chenille at Raytheon, or even Joe, as in acres. Tammy was at Forum when that happened. Premiere. Backscatter at rehabilitate, or even corruption, as in clomp. Composite at goniometer, or even amorous, as in armco. Tammy was at funny when that happened. Anisotropic. Woolworth at Reardon, or even larynx, as in route. Tammy was at bevy when that happened. Hindmost. Tammy was at decolonize when that happened. Stag. Gallop at shoulder, or even aspect, as in idolatry. Tammy was at qualified when that happened. Laughingstock. Flagstaff. Tammy was at hereunder when that happened. And downriver at wither, or even hamster, as in codfish. Tammy was at Dauphine when that happened. Agriculture. Tammy was at zoology when that happened. Interject. Companion at mutate, or even rainbow, as in proportionate. Tammy was at cybernetics when that happened. Ablate. Complacent at schoolmate, or even lunate, as in frostbitten. Loquacity at transmission, or even sporty, as in sonority. Tammy was at unkempt when that happened, despite Hadley at salvage, or even depress, as in fleeing. Tammy was at invasive when that happened. Bathe. Tammy was at Minoan when that happened. Amid. Chopin at diminish, or even ecstasy, as in emitted. Tammy was at byword when that happened. Mule. Berate at Solon, or even cranny, as in birdbath. Stare at coven, or even molest, as in gripe. Tammy was at embower when that happened. Abound. Daphne at diagnose, or even hope, as in lung. Tammy was at Sermon when that happened. Crust. Tammy was at Delectable when that happened. Oldster. Schrodinger at Glob, or even Smirk as in Grenoble. Tammy was at Marjoram when that happened. Nucleate. Corvette at Rockefeller, or even Credenza as in Rhombic. Stimulant at Idaho, or even Shish as in Adored. Tammy was at Throwaway when that happened, captured. A light at Mycology, or even Homecoming, as in Automata. Tammy was at Capital when that happened, chalkboard. Tammy was at Dollar when that happened, diagram. Expect at Malignant, or even Contributory, as in wasn't. Tammy was at Atrocious when that happened. Made. Careful. Tammy was at Tuberculin when that happened. Deficient. Filter at Wonder, or even Swoop, as in Descend. Tammy was at Nader when that happened. Buckle. Tammy was at Bacon when that happened. Ramp. Allay at Safety. Or even Dump, as in curtsy. Tammy was at Karen when that happened. Someplace.
Okay, so all in addition to being a composer, you're also a lesbian, which sometimes I find is just introduce things in the cheesiest way possible.
That's it.
So, how do you like with your writing and that sort of thing? What this is kind of a strange question that's hard for me to even really put into words. But a part of what I sort of have a challenge with doing my podcast is that I don't want to be closeted, but I also am not interested in doing a gay show. And I wonder if you have that sort of with your music, where, because I know that you're openly gay, but also, I mean, I don't really find your music to be gay music, quote unquote. What do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess for me, my attitude about the whole sort of identity politics thing is that it's only important when there's resistance. So, like, in a certain way, I think I try to imagine that the revolution has already taken place, and that I'm free to be, you know, have whatever sexual identity I have and express that in whatever ways that happen sort of automatically. And it's only when I'm confronted by a situation in which I feel like I have to assert that identity that I bring it front and center, if that makes sense, because then I have to stand up for it, you know?
Right.
And that's true, I think, for all of us, gay or straight, like different aspects of, you know, like my left-handedness undoubtedly contributes to part of who I am, but you know, unless I'm trying to use a can opener, it doesn't really come up, you know? But when
right.
it does come up, I feel like it's really my job to address it, you know? So if I feel like there's prejudice or negativity or unresolved issues or whatever, then I'll be kind of obnoxiously identity-ful, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But the rest of the time, I just simply take it for granted, and I take it for granted that it's fine with everybody else and that we're all on the planet together happily coexisting or something, you know? I mean, the question of whether a person's music can be lesbian music is, I mean, unless it's a specifically lesbian subject matter to a song or something like that, it's not clear to me how that would, you know, I mean, I know that there in the academic world, there's all this talk about feminist music theory and all this kind of stuff that I don't really follow because mm-hmm. I'm not in the academic world. And in a way, I think it all flirts with a kind of essentialism mm-hmm. about what men are like and what women are like and what gay people are like and what straight people are like. That is precisely what doesn't interest me. You know, like part of my urge is to be able to be who I am rather than whatever banner can be put above my head.
Right.
Even though in no way do I want to deny the multiple identities that I do have. I mean, you know.
I follow you.
Sorry, I don't know if that's...
No, it really is. And those are really hard things to put into words. I mean, that's kind of what I've been sort of struggling with a lot of this, too. Just that, yeah, like all that you said that you actually say much better than I do.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
It's hard to, like, yeah. I think, for me, it just comes from this basic desire to just exist as someone who has all these different kind of qualities and you know, parts of my personality and left or right handedness. I'm right handed, incidentally, just to make sure you know. But you know, like it's. But sometimes it feels like the world around us doesn't always let us just, you know, be all of those things without having expectations for us.
Right, and I think in a way the next step after sort of activism is to be able to relax about those identities and let them be, you know, sort of part of the air rather than something that has to be asserted, you know. But the minute I feel like it's an issue, mm-hmm. I'll definitely stand up. Even, I mean, so it's like if I find myself uncomfortable, then I'll assert that the thing that I'm feeling uncomfortable about.
Right.
Because I feel like that is my responsibility.
Let's listen to music.
Okay.
You wanna Solitude next, and it's from The Story of Bee, which I'm also not familiar with. So.
Yeah. Well, actually, that was done down at Diverse Works. Maybe 2004. I'm not exactly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Valentine's Day 2004 sounds right to me. And it's a project that I did as a collaboration with another composer based here in New York, a guy named Phil Klein, who is totally cool and wonderful. And he and I wrote a sort of song cycle based on this poetry of a French poet from the turn of the century, 19th century to 20th century, named Pierre Louis, who claimed to be translating ancient Greek lesbian poetry. But in fact, he made it all up, and he wrote it all himself.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, it's a really... And Debussy set some of these poems to music, and so they may be familiar to people who are into Debussy. But for me, what I thought was really cool about doing this as a collaboration with Phil, and now we're getting into the identity politics here, is that, you know, Phil is a straight male, you know, is going to approach these fake lesbian love poems in one way, and I, as an actual lesbian, are going to approach these fake lesbian poems in another way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a curious thing because in the 50s, maybe, there was a pre-Stonewall activist group called the Daughters of Bilitis, which is Bilitis being the protagonist that Pierre Louis invented as an ancient Greek lesbian.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, the line between male fantasy of lesbian and actual lesbian gets to be a little more porous than it is in contemporary porn, thank God. and so we wrote the song cycle, and he and I and two other performers, Margaret Lancaster on flute and Kamala Sankaram on sitar and accordion and other vocals and stuff like that, sort of put together a band to perform these songs. And Phil and I would exchange, you know, from song to song. He would sing lead on one song, I would sing lead on another song. And so in a sense, both of us were Belitis, this protagonist, having these experiences sort of going back and forth. So it was fun. So this is the song that ends the second section. In the first section, she's, you know, a young girl playing with her other little girlfriends, but also losing her virginity to a flute-playing shepherd boy. And then she goes to Lesbos, where she has a really intense relationship with a woman there. And then that woman leaves her. And this is the song that is the last song of that episode in her life. And then she goes to Cyprus, I believe, and becomes a courtesan and writes all these beautiful poems that we're listening to. And so this is called Solitude, and Phil and I wrote it together. So, and on the demo, I'm singing the lead vocal on, but in the show, Phil sang this song.
Cannot see them.
since we started talking about doing this interview and show, I've been throwing around the idea of ending the show with Written on the Body, which was a piece that was on the Twisted Tutu album. I haven't even said that Twisted Tutu is a performance duo that you're a part of.
Right.
With Kathleen Supove. Am I pronouncing her last name correctly?
Supove. Yeah. And we have one record out called Play Nice that's on OO Discs, which actually OO Discs may have folded also, but you can definitely get the disc on Amazon and many other places. It's quite accessible. So.
And it's so nice.
Oh, cool.
So nice. So this is the, do I remember correctly that this is the last piece on the track, on the album? And it's it's based, you're going to have to tell me because I can't remember the author's name now.
Jeanette Winterson, who's a British writer. Maybe her most famous novel is Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, maybe, which was made into a television thing by the BBC that is one of the cooler movies out there in the universe, so you should definitely check it out. But Written on the Body is the text of the song Written on the Body comes from the novel Written on the Body by Jeanette Winterson, which is a really beautiful novel about a relationship between a protagonist whose gender we don't know and a married woman. This text is from that.
And all of this is electronically produced. Is that right?
Totally. Yeah. It's all me and spoken, sung, and electronics. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so good. We have to. This is the type of piece that you really have to listen to get the full effect of it. The first time that it really sunk in for me, I was driving and. I think this was pre-iPod. I think I just had the CD in my car. And,
cool.
And it was just one of those moments that I was driving and not paying attention to like my typical sort of ADD listening habits. and it just, it's so hypnotic. It's a really wonderful piece.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So I'll end the show with that so we can say goodbye now. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really, really glad to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm really glad we've done this.
Yay.
Excellent.
And I'll have to track you down when we move to New York in a few months.
I can't wait.
It's
definitely.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
We'll hang out every day and we can give each other facials. It's going to be fabulous.
Sounds perfect. I'm totally ready.
So here is Written on the Body by Twisted Tutu featuring Eve Beglarian.
Blood back. Blood. Blood back. Taught. Blood. Blood back. Right. Blood. Blood back. Right. Blood. Blood back. Right. Blood back. Taught. Blood back. Right. Blood back. Taught. Blood back. Right. Blood back. Taught. Blood back. Right. Blood. Who taught you to use your hands?
branding iron. You've scored your name on your shoulders. Reference with your mark. The pads of your fingers have become printing marks. You tap a message onto my skin. Tap meaning into my body. Your Morse code interferes with my heart. Steady heart before I met you. I relied upon it. It had seen active service and grown strong. Now you alter its pace with your own will. You play upon me, drumming me, taught. Thank you.
Visible and certain. Written on my body is a secret code. Visible and certain.